Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, good afternoon. May it please the court, I'm here today representing Ronald Hankins, asking the court to reverse his conviction because of errors in the jury instruction dealing with extreme emotional distress. As you know, the prayer conference in this case, the transcript of that conference reveals considerable confusion over the distinction whether extreme emotional distress was an affirmative defense, a lesser included offense, or both. I would submit to the court that the confusion was never fully resolved, but the trial judge did give eventually an instruction on extreme emotional distress despite originally threatening not to do so. Because of the confusion about the nature of extreme emotional distress, the instructions given to the jury were at the outset misleading and a misrepresentation of the law. And those are not my
words. Mr. Capone, before you talk about given to the jury, I was looking at Superior Court Criminal Rule 30, and in capital cases, the jury is supposed to be given a typed version of the instructions. Was that done in this case?
I believe it was.
So as you're proceeding with your argument, my only question is, to the extent there's confusion, and you argue there's confusion based on placement in the instructions, does it make any difference that the jury had the written instructions with them in the jury room where they could flip through them and kind of refresh their recollection on what the judge did or didn't say?
Well, if the instructions are inconsistent, I believe there's confusion. So the instructions, even though they were in writing, contained what I suggest are substantial inconsistencies. And the inconsistencies were as follows. And they were misleading and a misrepresentation. Those are the state's words in describing the initial instructions that were given to the jury. The question then is, and I think we have to understand the magnitude of those initial instructions and how misleading they were before we can go look at the rest of the instructions and say, did those other instructions, which arguably were legally correct, but I would submit to the court were not entirely legally correct, did they cure the problems created by the initial misleading misinterpretations of the law in those initial instructions? The problem in a nutshell is this. It's the gateway language here. The judge told the jury that they had to find the state did not prove all the elements of murder in the first degree beyond a reasonable doubt before they could consider the lesser included offense of extreme emotional defense manslaughter, when a correct instruction would have told them they could embrace both. So in this case, in the definition of murder first, the judge also instructed the jury that if they found the defendant intentionally killed the victims, they should find the defendant guilty of murder in the first degree. Your Honors, in my closing to the jury, I did not dispute that my client intentionally killed the victims in this case. I pretty much admitted that he had met the definitions of murder in the first degree. I took the position then, I take it now, the state took the position then that EED manslaughter is not a lesser included offense of murder first degree.
Well, were there, I'm confused on this point, help me out. There were lesser included offense instructions on murder second and manslaughter generally.
That's true.
You did not request those.
I requested a manslaughter EED defense, and I believe I requested a murder second degree defense as well.
And a straight manslaughter?
I don't believe so.
Did the court instruct on manslaughter?
The court did instruct on manslaughter, but used the EED definition of manslaughter.
All right.
Manslaughter comes in different varieties, and EED is found in 641. It's also found in the manslaughter definition. My recollection is that the judge instructed them on manslaughter using the extreme emotional defense definition.
All right. And do you agree if the jury convicts of murder second, there's no extreme emotional distress defense to murder second?
I agree with that.
I'm just trying to recollect how I used to instruct on these, and I would instruct that murder first, murder second, manslaughter, and then give an instruction on extreme emotional distress, reducing any murder one to manslaughter.
And you know what? You and I had a case together, an extreme emotional distress case together. And I was trying to remember how that was done then, and I couldn't find my file on that. But I, since that time, my thoughts about the subject may have changed considerably. Because as I looked at it now, I was concerned about the fact that by saying you can only get to manslaughter or a lesser included offense if you don't find the state's met its, all the elements beyond a reasonable doubt, I think that takes the case away from the jury. In this case, I was telling the jury that the state has proved murder in the first degree. So
with the benefit of your argument and the court's instructions, their probable immediate focus in the jury room was on extreme emotional distress?
Well, certainly my entire argument was extreme emotional distress. But the point was, here's one thing that I guess I didn't learn in law school, and I guess I've never read it in a case book, but it's something that I think I've observed in my years of trying cases. It's this. I think that jurors pay more attention to the beginning of jury instructions than they pay to the middle of jury instructions. I think jurors probably pay more attention to the end of jury instructions than they do to the middle.
As I understand your argument, if we make an analogy to a civil case where juries are given special interrogatories, you say if you answer the first question one way, stop. If you answer the next question, if you answer it the opposite way, go to question two, three, and so forth. As I understand your argument, the way the judge instructed the jury on first-degree murder and then going to second-degree and manslaughter with extreme emotional distress at the end, the jury would have been confused because at the end of the instruction of first-degree murder, your argument is the judge should have said, unless you find extreme emotional distress. And then you would have had a self-contained focus on murder in the first degree with the extreme emotional distress.
That's how I submitted the applicant that the instruction should have been given. Should have been one harmonious instruction, murder first degree. However, if you find that he was acting under extreme emotional distress, then it's manslaughter. And not even telling him it's a lesser included offense, then it's manslaughter.
So going back to my analogy, your proposition is when the jury got done reading the paragraph, as everyone agrees was confusing, they stopped prematurely because they never got to extreme emotional distress.
They could have. I wasn't in the jury room. And we don't know what happened in the jury room. But if the jurors literally said, you know what, look at what this says. It says that if they proved every element of murder beyond a reasonable doubt, we shall find him guilty of murder first degree. That's the instruction. To say then, well, that's not exactly what I meant, or we're supposed to figure out that's not exactly what he meant, that's expecting a lot of a jury.
All right. So address the state's argument, if you will, that if we look at the instructions as a whole, according to the state, we would find on five separate occasions something that is close to being correct. And that if we read them as a whole, the jury could have figured out what they were supposed to do and discharged their function.
Well, the reason why I say we have to understand the magnitude of the problem, my argument is the magnitude of the first mistakes was so great that even if they went back and read the entire instructions and parsed it over and saw that the judge came close to giving a legally correct answer, perhaps they would have done it. But this isn't a case like Claudio or Miller, where we're talking about the difference between, in terms between substantial cause or just cause. I mean, this is a major mistake at the very beginning of the instructions, and we're expecting the jury then to say, there's a contradiction here, and which one of these contradictions are we supposed to, which side of the contradiction are we supposed to be on? We're expecting the jury, let me say it this way. I think that the jury instructions reflected the judge's confusion over the nature of extreme emotional distress.
I think your comment that these instructions were not submitted to the court by you or by the prosecutor, that the court drafted everything and said, this is what I'm going to give?
The instructions that were given were drafted by the judge. They were not the instructions that I did provide a draft of proposed instruction for murder, extreme emotional distress.
All right.
So, did you see the written instructions before they were given to the jury?
I can't recall.
Well, isn't it the practice for the trial judge to give everybody the written instructions before the jury goes out?
It is. So it may very well have happened that I did receive a copy of this before the jury came in. But I can't actually recall at this time. But I hope that the transcript is clear that we had a long discussion about this. I was, frankly, Your Honor, I would have taken any instruction that included EED in any form. If the judge would have put it at the tail end of the instructions, I would have accepted that because I needed to make an argument. I mean, I was threatened by the judge. Threatened is a strong word. But the judge said, you know what, I'm not going to give EED if you tell me it's not a lesser included offense. And I think the transcript is clear. I was pleading with him. I withdraw all my comments. You've got to give an extreme emotional distress defense, no matter where you give it, I'll take it. So I would have accepted anything.
Well, on that topic of the instructions, did you state an exception on the record to the instructions that were given?
I believe in the transcript, he says, you know, everything we've said on the in the prayer conference constitutes your exceptions. I believe that's noted in the record. So the fact, we're back to the point where there's a contradiction. I think I was saying the contradiction, I believe, reflects the judge's confusion about the nature of EED, whether it's an affirmative defense or an LIO. Now, if the instructions are a reflection of the confusion, can we then expect that the jury is going to be able to look at those confusing instructions and say, but we, the jury, 12 laymen sitting here, we can figure out what he really means, even though he said it five times later, and provide a correct interpretation of the law. I submit that that's asking a lot of the jury. So,
it's an affirmative defense.
In my view, yes, it's an affirmative defense.
And that's something you would have had the burden on.
And I acknowledge that, and I argued that. And in the instruction I provided, I stated that.
And did the trial judge place the burden on you in the instructions given?
I believe he did.
So were any of your requested instructions included in what was given? Let me ask you.
Well, he gave a section on extreme emotional distress that pretty much tracked the statute, except he said it's a lesser included offense. And then he defined a lesser included offense.
Are your written requests in the record?
My requests are not in the record. And I've noted in my brief that they were submitted to the trial judge. If you're in the transcript, the trial judge says, Mr. Capone, I'm taking your submissions and I'm making them a court exhibit. And that was it. So I expected when I reviewed the record in the court's file, I was going to find my instructions as a court exhibit, but they were not in the court file.
Is that something that you think you and the and the state can agree upon as to what was submitted by counsel at the prayer conference?
At this moment?
No.
In the future?
Yes.
I submit there's probably a good chance of that.
So you've identified during the argument two problems with the instructions. The first statement was incorrect about first degree murder. The second is characterizing the extreme emotional distress as a lesser included offense in the instructions to the jury when in fact it was an affirmative defense.
Correct.
And that goes back to the prayer conference where the judge, based on what you're telling us today, was fairly insistent that that was the judge's view, and you were going to do whatever you had to do to accommodate him to get the jury instructed on extreme emotional defense, and rather than protract or prolong that debate with the judge.
I don't think that it was going to be prolonged anymore. I mean, we were about to go into, I was about to give a closing argument that I had worked long and hard on and focused entirely on extreme emotional distress, and I was faced with the prospect of not being able to give it. And I will tell you this, that I was flummoxed. I was frightened, and I didn't know what I was going to do. I would have accepted. I was happy. When I left there, I was happy just to be able to argue extreme emotional distress. So that's the way it was. And
we're not suggesting there was anything wrong with that. We're just trying to understand the record.
Well, I hope I filled in the blanks on that. It was pretty difficult. But then the judge, when he defined what a lesser included offense is, he gave a definition that didn't exactly fit this offense. I mean, this really isn't a lesser included offense. So he said, you have to go get past the gateway language, finding that the state didn't prove all the elements of murder first beyond a reasonable doubt. Then you have to find that it's a lesser included offense. And here's my definition of lesser included offense. And guess what? It didn't fit that definition either. So there was a couple of problems here that the jury had to overcome.
Did the parties in any way contribute to the confusion, if the trial judge had it, on what EED was by not requesting a specific straight manslaughter instruction? You're saying there was no request for straight manslaughter.
I'm telling you, to the best of my recollection, there was not. If you look at my closing argument, I didn't argue straight manslaughter. I just argued extreme emotional distress. That was the focus of the entire case. So if I did ask for something else, on the manslaughter, it would have been inconsistent with what I was arguing. So based upon the fact that it was I'm asserting to the court that this was a substantial. This issue involves a substantial interpretation of statutory law. Therefore, I believe that it's entitled to a de novo review. So that pretty much there's one other thing. Last week, this court decided Weber versus State. And in Weber, this court said that lesser-included offenses are used to ensure that the jury will accord the defendant the full benefit of the reasonable doubt standard. So that's apparently the purpose of lesser-included offenses. But reasonable doubt was never an issue in this case. My client never asked for the full benefit of the doubt of reasonable doubt standard. We agreed that the state
But you did ask for a murder two instruction.
A murder two instruction was given.
Well, you asked for it, right?
I believe I did ask for it.
You want to save your last 2 minutes?
Yes. Thank you.
Well, please, the court. First of all, factually, this is a very simple case. The defendant was sat there, brought out a gun, and shot and killed two people. And the crimes of first-degree murder with which he was charged, intentional murder, is a very simple crime. You intend to kill somebody, and you do it. So there's nothing particularly complicated about this. Now, the defendant's position is that just because the judge gave an acquittal transition instruction after giving the first-degree murder instruction, and then proceeded to give as in a position normally reserved for lesser-included offenses, I think, by my count, five times, if you should find the defendant intentionally killed this person or that person, then you should consider five times mitigating circumstance of extreme emotional distress. So that repetition, now maybe that acquittal transition instruction, the standard acquittal transition instruction that's often given, logically, looked at very logically, prevented the jury, we had a jurors of Mr. Spock, who finally seen that instruction said, okay, well, let's ignore everything else. We've agreed he's intentionally killed these two people. Therefore, we're simply going to forget everything else the judge said, because right here it says if you only could only go forward if you have a reasonable doubt as to one of the elements of the offense. And there's two elements, right? Intended and killed. But I think in the real world, the juror is going to consider all the instructions together. And having
a typewritten set of the instructions in the record?
Pardon?
Is a typewritten set of the instructions in the record?
I have not seen the typewritten instructions. I did not ask the prosecutor, Mr. Kreiner, whether they whether there are typewritten instructions. And if there are, I don't know whether they were put in the record or not. The only instructions I'm aware of, the ones that are in the transcript.
But you agree, under Superior Court Rule 30, they're supposed to be typed and given to the jury.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. I'm just saying personally, as to this case, I have not seen them, so I can't submit whether that was followed or not.
If you believe
no,
that,
typically it
you,
is.
You believe that you and defense counsel can construct first a what was submitted by the defendant and or the state to the trial judge, and second, the typewritten instructions. So if they're not in the record, we can have them?
Certainly. Right. Certainly. Be happy to. I'm sure Mr. Capone would also. So anyway, my position is clear that that single section of the instruction, but the acquittal transition instruction there, could not possibly have stopped the jury from considering the offense, the mitigating circumstance or the partial defense.
Does the record reflect that the judge referred to extreme emotional distress as a lesser included offense?
Yeah. And it is listed in the definition of manslaughter. I mean, it's subsection 3. So then it appears also in the in its own special section immediately following the murder first degree. But
so is it your position that you disagree with Mr. Capone that it's not an affirmative defense, it is a lesser included offense?
Well, the crime itself to which extreme emotional distress leads, manslaughter, is of course a lesser included offense of second of first degree murder, as that's defined. However, the defendant has the burden of proof. The state is not going to prove that the defendant killed someone under the influence of extreme emotional distress, because we have no way of doing that. That's a classic affirmative defense kind of a burden of proof, and the defendant has that burden of proof, because only the defendant could say what kind of distress he was under. So it does have many of the aspects of an affirmative defense, but it's not a complete offense. It could be considered a partial affirmative defense, or as the code calls it, simply a mitigating circumstance. But I think the judge was referring to it as a lesser included offense because it's subsection 3 of the manslaughter statute, and manslaughter, the crime of which the defendant, a successful EED defense leads, is a lesser included offense of first degree murder. And I think I said it in my brief that the confusion there during the prayer conference is understandable, and both views are defensible. In this case, the judge felt that EED instruction, EED manslaughter instruction, should be given along with whatever other lesser included defenses were requested. In this case, it was second degree murder. So the state's position simply is that the one misstatement, if one should call it that, the acquittal transition instruction, when balanced against the correct EED manslaughter instructions that were immediately followed it, the jury was not confused or in any way misled in their deliberations. Court has no further instructions or questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
just go back to the, Your Honors, I would just go back to the point that not only was there a problem with the transition language, but by calling this a lesser-included offense and defining it as an offense is lesser-included when it is included, when it is established by proof of the same or less than all of the facts required to establish the commission of an offense charged. So by characterizing it as a lesser-included offense, that itself is another error in the instruction. So if we look at the cases that ask us, that instruct us on jury, the propriety of jury instructions, we look at the Burrell case. The issue there was whether the term assists is synonymous to in furtherance of. That was the issue there. That's a minor issue. It's a synonymous term. In Cabrera, the use of the word caution versus substantial caution. I think we all see that those are not big issues for a jury to overcome. A jury can make the distinction between caution and substantial caution. But in this case, we're dealing with legal errors, a misstatement of the law. And to say, well, because the judge pretty much got it right five times after the fact, the jury should be able to figure it out. Like I said before, I think that's giving the jury a little bit too much credit. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and adjourn.